Welcome back to the Prepared Mindset Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, as always, Austin. And this week, we're going to dive into rifles, carbines, whatever you want to call it, right? Long guns, maybe some short ones. I don't know. I'm sure barrel length is probably, it's probably going to come up in the discussion. It's something that I think is really relevant, especially as we talk about we'll say predominantly the AR-15 platform, right? But rifles and carbines being the most popular, most common weapon system worldwide. And yes, that seems like a really obvious statement. And I think there's a large degree of you guys that are out there that really like the AK platform. It's not something that I personally prescribe to. Have had the opportunity to shoot the AK a couple times, variations of it, things like the 74, 47, couple different variants and clones. One that was actually a pre-ban, so it's like a 20 inch barrel, had like really nice wood furniture on it, very very old, only put like 10 rounds through it. Really cool, not exactly the softest shooting platform in the world, but obviously very very reliable, used in numbers of conflicts around the world. But I think what we're going to talk about today is the AR platform. And I just had somebody ask me the other day, like, hey, I was going to look into buying a gun for home defense. What would you recommend? And immediately their first thing was, I was looking at buying a shotgun. And I think that's, a lot of people's, I would say, knee-jerk response for the uninitiated, right? That's not a dig to say that about this person or anything like that. It's not even about them. It's just what their assumption was. And, hey, how big's your house? And it's like, well, we're moving, but it's going to be, 1,100, 1,200 square feet, pretty modest size home. And like, hey, man, just so you know, in most instances within the confines of what you're going to have for your home, the spread on the shotgun, he mentioned that. I was like, it's not going to be as wide as you think. So you're not just going to be able to blindly fire and hit easier, right? And also, they're not really that fun to shoot as somebody who has not shot a lot before. There's a number of issues behind it. So, my recommendation for this individual, for his very specific needs and purposes, without putting all of his stuff out there, was to buy an AR. And, hey, I think there's kind of a stigma around those. I go, yeah, but here's why I think you should do it anyway. Because one, stigmas are dumb. Two, it's a lot of uninformed nonsense. But we're going to probably touch on some of that stuff, but we're also going to get into, honestly, how you run your gun. I'm going to sit down with Garrett Neal today, and Garrett's been on once before. He runs RAS Group, RAS Group. I think it's RAS. Sorry in advance, Garrett. But great dude and a really solid shooter. He's been putting a lot of time in on his handgun shooting, but a very capable carbine shooter as well. And, I think that the insight he can bring to the discussion is going to be really helpful and something that we haven't done in a while, have a guest sit down for a very focused conversation on this, especially because so many of us shoot a carbine. So many of us train with the carbine, have taken classes on it. So I think a large number of you guys listening already have what I would consider to be a baseline knowledge on the platform and probably some fair opinions on it as well. So what I think we're going to say today, what we're going to get into, will probably align with some of them. And I think some of those you guys will probably have personal disagreements with. There's not exactly a right way or a wrong way to do it. It's a very individualized choice. Lord knows there's enough guys out there on the internet telling you do it this way. No, do it that way. This is just the way that he and I do it, and I'm going to look to Garrett, I think, for a little bit of his insight and knowledge and experience, right, competitively shooting the AR platform, which a lot of people say, oh, it doesn't make a difference. Well, the execution does not necessarily change, right, if it's competition versus, tactical or something else, but the way you set the gun up, the considerations for that may be very different, and that's probably true. Competition shooters, they don't run lasers on their guns, and they run, lightweight red dots and things. They're not going to run huge LPVOs if it's a small or a short, rather, course of fire, right? If you're within 25 yards, which a lot of these courses are, right? And whether that's pistol caliber, carbine, or otherwise, it's just going to be a very basic red dot. So we're going to get into all of that, you guys. It should be a really, really cool opportunity to dig into some of the minutiae on this, which is considered an otherwise very common, and a lot of people would say common sense subject, just because the amount of exposure to this discussion is so great. But before we get into this week's discussion with Garrett. I want to say thank you to our partners in the industry. Through their support and their contributions, we're able to make Prepared Mindset what it is, and that certainly starts with the team over at Custom Night Vision. You guys, head on over to CustomNightVision.com, see all the great stuff they have available for you. I actually had two separate people on Friday last week reach out to me with questions. Hey man, I've listened to the podcast. Hey, I've checked out your content on the YouTube channel and you seem to know a bit about this stuff. So can you help me out here? The first guy was asking about buying his first unit. He had, you know, I think almost two decades in law enforcement is what he had told me, and was looking to get into potentially a really nice PVS 14 from one company. And I was able to say, hey man, why don't you go check over with the guys at Custom Night Vision? Like, if you're not getting a deal or a discount, why don't you go check them out and see what their prices are? And the guys at Custom were able to come in $800 cheaper and able to sit down and consult with them. Like, hey, do you really want the high spec 14? Would some different tubes in a binocular housing help you out? And it sounds like he's going with the new ANBG or ANVG, the new housing that they have over at Custom again. CustomNightVision.com. You can look at all of the binocular housings they have available. And he's going with some NNVT, white phosphor tubes, because he's just going to be doing flat range training. He has a very specific task set that he needs to use those for. So they're able to get him hooked up. And on top of that, he's going to have money left over in his budget to get a helmet and a laser to complete the setup. Really, really good stuff, you guys. And they have a ton of options on the website. You can actually go straight to CustomNightVision.com. Right on the homepage, there's a monocular builder tool or a binocular builder tool. You can, from the lenses to the tubes to the housing, everything, select exactly what you want. And even add on helmets from Team Wendy and lasers from companies like HoloSun, Steiner, B.E. Myers, Wilcox, and a whole lot more. They're literally the one-stop shop for all of your night vision needs, you guys. Custom Night Vision in Houston, Texas. The website, one last time here, is CustomNightVision.com. Head on over and check it out yourself today. Also, I want to say a thank you to Harrington Arms, you guys. I had the opportunity to shoot their HC95 V2 compensator this weekend. Went out to the range, had been running the V1, and the big difference there that they had explained and then advertised obviously on the website was an additional 8% recoil reduction. So the largest ports of any handgun that they offer, and it was an absolute joy to shoot. With the ammo I was shooting and a new barrel and, you know, my recoil spring, I probably can't continue to run that just because I wasn't getting lockbacks. That's not to say it's anything wrong with the product. It's designed for people who do shoot those competition style setups. So I went back to the V1, no problems there. Absolutely outstanding products, you guys. Love the compensators and really looking forward to their hacker system coming out later this year. That's their proprietary barrel and compensator setup where it's a QD, so just a push button to remove that compensator. Then you can put on like an attachment for threads to run a suppressor, stuff like that. Head on over to Harrington Arms. That's Harrington with an E, harringtonarms.com. Check out all of the good stuff they got going on, from mag extensions to magwells, compensators, and a heck of a lot more. So thank you to both of those companies for their continued support of what we do here. Would not be able to do all this week to week with the YouTube content. Go check out the YouTube channel, you guys. The Instagram, the podcast, we have a Patreon, you know, all that good stuff without the support of our partners in the industry. So thank you to them, and thank you to you guys, honestly, for listening, for always coming back and checking out the pod. But like I said, this week, we're sitting down with Garrett. We're getting into carbine stuff, you know, and I'm sure we'll probably take the discussion a couple of different directions. You know, I think the last time we had Garrett sit down, that's kind of how it went. And he's a tremendous dude. You know, he's a very honest guy, very straightforward. Some people don't like him for that. It's one of the things I actually appreciate most about him, though. Maybe that makes me interesting or unique that I look for that in folks. Like, if I'm doing something dumb, I just want you to tell me, man. If you disagree, I want you to tell me. Be respectful about it, but, like, I want to know. And we've had some fantastic discussions in the past. One of them, yes, on the pod, but a lot of them just private conversations, chatting about stuff in the community, the industry, some of the execution around shooting and stuff like that. So very much looking forward to reconnecting with Garrett. But like I said a moment ago, getting into the minutia of running carbines, because everybody does it a little bit different. There's some things that some guys love that I just look at, and as soon as I see that on a rifle, maybe, you know, I'll say one is like a certain stock, certain handguard setups and things like that. I just look at it, I'm like, you have no clue what you're doing, because they try to like jerry-rig it into an application it's not fit for, stuff like that. So should be a very insightful discussion. I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. So with that, let's sit down with Garrett. Here we go. Garrett, man, welcome back to the podcast, dude. How are you?
I'm good, man. How you been?
Not too bad. You know, we're getting to the later parts of the year here, getting busy with work. Holidays are like a month away now. We're officially going to be out of the training season and into the have to do family thing season. So all good stuff, right? But just busier and busier by the week. But happy to have the opportunity to catch up with you. I know we talk a lot on like social media periodically, but we don't really get to sit down and do long form conversations. So I know talking specifically, I don't even remember what it was that we were posting back and forth or sharing. Something led us to the point where I was like, why don't we sit down and talk about rifles? Like, I don't remember what it was. I think it was something competition oriented that was going back and forth. I'm like, let's do it, man. Because I have like my idea of how to set up a rifle, right? But I think everyone will disagree. Well, not everybody. A lot of people will disagree on how I do it. And maybe that's the beautiful part or the dumb part of it. But I thought it'd be really good to like get into this and sit down with you and like cut it up, man.
Oh, absolutely, man. And I'll be the first to say, like, I'm always relearning stuff when it comes to a rifle. Preferences I had 6 months ago, I dropped off, brought back, dropped off again. I'm always experimenting. So this is a fluid work in progress for me. I didn't really get into rifle competition until after I was very heavily invested with pistol. So I'm still always learning, but I have figured out a few things that just happened to work for me and a few kind of universal truths, if you will. So yeah, we'll definitely dive into some stuff. I'm excited. I'm super stoked to be back on the podcast. So thank you for that.
Of course.
Yeah, man. I mean,
I think
you want to start.
Well, yeah, I mean, what you said, I think, is kind of the way it needs to be for folks, and that like fluid process as you try different things, as because I mean, it's not a black and white process. Like learning how to shoot better is not black and white. There's not like, if you do this, you will shoot good. If you do not do this, you will shoot bad. And specifically, I mean, like there are a lot of skills like that combine together when you talk about good shooting. So it, you know, you could get way better at if there were five skills, right? Like there's not, there's more than that, but like five things, right? And one of them you did bad, so you changed, I don't know, the vertical grip on your rifle to address it, but then you get good at these other two adjacent skills, and then over time, like, you don't need that. And like, it's just, that's a really piss poor way of explaining it, but as you get better at different things, your approach changes, and it should be a fluid thing where you revisit concepts. We were talking about, you know, compensators and how I'm, you know, taking the time on in my handgun stuff right now to like at least give it a fair shot before I just look at it and say, this stuff is garbage. You don't need a comp or whatever. So what you said, I think, is spot on, man, as a start. Like, it should be fluid, and you should never write. I mean, okay, there's some things you should write off. I'm not gonna say there's nothing. There's some stupid shit out there, but I think for the most part, like, give stuff a shot, you know? And maybe, I don't know if you can expound on that for you, like what you're currently doing or what you've been through, I guess. I mean, recently, or I don't know how you approach the subject.
So I guess like a little bit of my backstory with rifles. I just, after 3 years of teaching handgun stuff, I've just started getting into teaching rifle stuff this year. And that's even on kind of an experimental basis where I prefab people, or I pre-warn people and say, hey, like, rifle's not really my forte. There's a lot of great guys out there that do it. If you are adamant that you want me to teach you, I will give you everything that I've picked up, that I figured out, that I've learned. So essentially, rifle stuff kind of started in a weird way. I was doing a lot of Instagram shooting challenges with handgun stuff, and eventually came across this handgun, this challenge that involved pistol and rifle. Mm-hmm. It was the Alpha Omega Kydex Only Alphas drill. And it was really, really fast course of fire, two targets at 7 yards. You start with rifle, two to the A zone, two to the A zone, transition to pistol, two to the A zone, two to the A zone. And I had to be all alphas in under 3 seconds.
Oh, okay. And, yeah, that is fast.
Yeah, no, it was super challenging. And I went out one day and everything kind of clicked together. I was feeling it. Some things started to come aware for me. And not long after that, I ended up getting kind of picked up or associated, however you want to say it, with modern material rifles. And I quickly realized, looking around at all the other dudes that they were affiliated with, I was like, man, I'm the worst one. I was like, there's I start diving into rifle stuff. I realize, like, man, like, as soon as I get out to like 25, 30 yards, I'm just so unpredictable. I don't like the feeling of this at all. And I started working rifle stuff and working it and working it and learning more about how to connect to the rifle, what's giving you good input, what's giving you bad input, optic heights, how to set up a rifle to accentuate certain skills that, if you have stuff in the way, it's going to 100% hinder you. So just it's been a road ever since, man. I mean, it's been wild, to say the least. And I get excited thinking about it because I didn't start really shooting rifle a lot till maybe around a year ago as of right now. And it's progressed into, I started doing two gun competitions, and that transpired into me being pretty competitive at my local two gun event. Not to say like I'm a PCSL champion. I'm no Kyle Litzy. I'm nothing in that caliber. But I started seeing things that I was doing that was helping me win versus guys that I was putting 20, 30, 40 seconds on per stage. And I realized, oh man, like some of this stuff is making sense now. I finally have a why as to what I'm doing.
And I think you actually kind of did it backwards, starting with handguns. I think a lot of guys start with a rifle because it's easier. Well, I mean, not to say that performance shooting is easy, but as a general comment on the platforms side by side, handguns are more difficult to be to shoot at a high level with. So a lot of shooters will start with the carbine. You kind of did it in reverse. Doesn't make a difference necessarily. And I think that, people get kind of tied up in like what you, I'll say what you put on the gun rather than like what you do with it. And
Correct.
it's, dude, it's easy. It's a lot of fun. Like, I love scrolling through the stuff on Instagram too, right? Like, looking at the pictures and things like that. Kind of at the point now where, like, I don't know, I would rather see what that particular setup would lend to you, right, as a end user. Like, hey, you flipped around like the control setup you have, like for your light and your laser or something. Like, what does that lend to you? Like, don't just do that because you saw somebody do it. Like, I didn't switch mine until I actually got hands on with somebody's. Actually, it was Blake Flannery when we were in Pennsylvania last month. Yeah, last month. I'm like, okay, this makes sense now. I will try this. Some guys will do goofy shit just because they see somebody on the internet do it. Not saying you shouldn't try stuff, but understand, like have some kind of like understanding of what it's going to get for you. So when we talk about shooting carbine, like I think there's some differences. And you're saying modern material. Is that still like is that pretty much exclusively like what you shoot just because of your affiliation? Or I don't know how good they are. I think they're probably pretty decent. I've seen a lot of guys talk about them online, but I've never shot one personally.
Yeah, so I actually, it's one of those circumstances where it's hard for somebody to call me a shill because I owned my first nicer rifle that I ever owned, was a Modern Material Mod Mat 16, like one of their OG rifles. And I still have it, super proud of that thing. Did a lot of things right without knowing it at the time, based on kind of some opinions I have on things now. And I used that rifle for a long, long time. I ended up picking up a second one at some point, and it's now I think I have a total of six of them. And but the crazy part is, I just use one rifle. I use one rifle to teach with, to train with. It would be my rifle that I grab going. It's literally my rifle set up for me. Nothing I don't need, everything that I would want. And that's where I leave it. Same thing with my handgun setup now. Like, I have a very simple handgun setup, very simple rifle setup, and it just works for me.
So with when you're doing like teaching and competition, do you have two separate setups for that, or do you find that there's a lot of like overlap for you as an end user?
No, I don't have different setups for that. So for me, it's kind of going back to the core root of why we do this, right? I want to train and teach and do everything with what I would actually use come a given situation, right? So I definitely have taken off some stuff that I actually used to prefer and kind of still do for the sake of me teaching with this rifle. And we'll kind of talk about that a little bit, but overall, like this is it. Like this rifle I have in front of me is kind of the one.
So what has that process been like for you? Because I know, like I was saying, just, I think like a minute ago, like we'll see a lot of folks, they build their rifle based off of what they see somebody else doing, right? Like they emulate a good shooter. Like I'll say personally, for many years, I ran the reverse BCM vertical grip because I saw Lucas from TRX Arms. Like I saw Lucas run it. I was like, he shoots really well. Maybe this is a cheat code that I didn't know about or something. And I did find it pretty comfortable. Now here we are years later. I am ironically within the last couple of weeks switching to no forward grip and just like a finger stop, just something for some kind of retention. But otherwise getting away from them. I mean, that's part of what we were talking about earlier. What was that like, you know, for you exploring different setups and because there's so much stuff out there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the best way to do it is just kind of example by example, because that's how everything was learned. Like I would try one thing, no, and that's kind of what I was paying attention to, and was that one thing at a time premise. And then I didn't like it, no, didn't like it, no. Finally, like tried something that somebody recommended because they gave me a good why, and I picked it up and just kind of would leave it. Then I'd find the next area of preference. Probably the one thing people ask me about most right now, and I guess it's kind of unusual for a lot of people, is I do not run any wires or pressure pads for my weapon light. I don't, and I don't use any type of forward grip as an index point to be able to find that light. So my whole methodology was I wanted to have as minimal things on this rifle as possible, because I early on I was like, well, this is going to be my teaching rifle, right? And I knew what light I want to go with. I went with a ModLight 18650 OKW, and I started thinking about it, and I'm like, well, what pressure pad stuff do I want to run? And I tried the mod button, I tried the Unity hot button, I tried it with the little ramp things that they have that like change the
Oh,
angle
yeah.
of where the button sits. I tried all sorts of stuff, and I could never find a great way to just tuck my wires away.
Yeah, that's tough.
And I was like, okay, let's try just not having one. So I ran like, I think it was like either an Arisaka or maybe a ModLight tail cap that I have, but it's momentary only. And I was like, I kind of hate that. It gets it 100% like, if you choke up on the rifle to engage the tail cap, it's tough when you're shooting a long string of fire to just keep pressure on that light. So I was like, okay, that's not working great for me. And then I ended up finding the Unity gas cap, which gives me everything I could ask for. It gives me a USB-C port so I can plug in a pressure pad if I ever wanted to, momentary and constant on. And I was like, that's it. That's all I need. Like, I don't need a shit ton of extra stuff that I'm not using. And I can still access the light pretty predictably just based on I'm using the swivel mount from Overboard. So if I'm not running a laser, which I don't run night vision very often, so I didn't even bother putting a laser on this rifle. I have other guns that have lasers. And I was like, well, I don't really use night vision much. And nothing against the guys that do that have lasers on their guns full time. It's just not something that I use, so why keep it on there? So, yeah, I mean, if you're not using night vision, there is an argument, a good one I heard, for having a vis laser on a rifle when you don't have night vision, but maybe own a gas mask. That was kind of the only good argument I ever heard somebody make, where they said, well, if depending on the gas mask you have, if it prevents you getting like some sort of pseudo cheek weld, having a vis laser in real time that you can implement, see, and put relatively accurate rounds on target. And I was like, that's not a bad argument, but I don't foresee me needing a laser for any reason. It's just not something that I'm going to use very often on my main rifle. And if that ever changes, I'd put a laser on. But that was something that I've had a lot of people ask me about. They're like, well, why don't you run any type of switch? Why do you run the light on your support hand side? And I was like, well, it's what works for me. I can actuate the light pretty easily. Never had a problem doing it so far. And to me, it's good to go. And from there, it was kind of the whole vertical foregrip thing. One, I learned that not all rail panels and scales and covers are created equal. So,
They really fucking aren't. And until you guys listening, until you know the anguish and frustration of trying to put something on when your rail is out of spec or something, you won't really appreciate it. It's the most frustrating thing in the world.
well, that, and I feel like most guys are doing it for aesthetics. I really do, because when you shoot a rifle and you're like really getting into it with a rifle, like you are 500 rounds into a training day, that gun is gonna be hot. There's no way around it. I don't care what type of rail you have, who makes it, whatever. The gun's gonna get hot, especially if you're out in the sun. The issue I had was I'm sick of burning my hand and I don't want to wear a glove. I don't want to carry gloves on me just for the sake of running the rifle. So this Lunar Concept Hot Pocket rail wrap thing, this has been absolutely amazing in my opinion. I've been able to run this really, really, really hard, and I can feel the heat coming from underneath of it, but it's not en nearly enough to burn me. So
Do you run a can? And if so, like, do you use a suppressor wrap as well? Just 'cause those things seem to be really closely related with a lot of folks.
yeah, so the cool part, and this is where I tell people, like, I would rather run a brake than a flash hider, because depending on the brake, I can still put a can on there. And with this Modern Material V2 brake, I can still run the old, it's old school, but it works. It's the Griffin gate lock system.
Well, I was just gonna ask, like, with a flash hider versus the muzzle brake, like, what your thoughts like on the pros and cons are, because it's usually kind of stupidly, like, hotly debated amongst people, like, which one's better? You need to run, like, I run all flash hiders, but that's not saying that's the right way to do it.
Yeah, so I purposely left my brake on here. I think it gives you, when you're unsuppressed, a lot of heavy benefit. And for people that say, well, a compensator on a rifle is cheating, it's usually the same guys that are saying that are running ports and comps on their pistols. So it's kind of like a weird argument that people make. And if it can help you return the dot faster, and I think people lose track of that. Like, when you suppress a flash hider, or you're running a flash hider unsuppressed, 100% less concussive boom, less flash, that's great. But the problem that you run into is if you have to have 2 second split times between shots because you're not able to return your dot fast enough to that point that you need to return the dot to, what is it all for anyway, right? So 100%, it's kind of like anything. Like, if you can connect to a rifle good enough and run it well enough and fast enough that you don't want a compensator, to each their own, do whatever you want. But if you're somebody that has never learned about the kind of the nuances of rifle connection and how in depth that really goes, like what each part of your body should be doing to that rifle or not doing to the rifle, 100% I'll run a comp 10 times out of 10 if I get the choice. If I don't get a choice, I'll run a flash hider and I can still connect to the rifle very well, still have very predictable results. But I would always, to me, especially for the sake of especially competing, but even teaching or even like going out my front door and handling something, I would run a comp. And if you're worried about the concussive forces or the flash that it's going to emit from that, throw on a can, right? I have very, very, it's amazing what a can does to a four port brake when it's actually adequately suppressed, right? If you throw a K series can onto a big ass brake and it doesn't suppress as good as you think it does, you're like, oh, well, this sucks. Well, think about it, man. You're using the most minimalist amount of design and minimalist amount of baffles to suppress something that was designed to purposefully be concussive so that it keeps a rifle relatively flat. You have to
I
kind of
mean,
think about that going into it.
right tool for the job. Like, it's just it works, right? But don't expect the best of outcomes when you are combining essentially the worst of components, I guess.
Correct, right? So I personally think it's everybody's preference. You should be able to perform with either, in my mind. It really doesn't matter. But if you want to give yourself just a little bit of added advantage, especially unsuppressed, I would run a comp. And if you're gonna somebody who's gonna suppress 75% of the time, okay, well, I would still get a comp, because if you're gonna suppress it, what does it matter anyway? So that's kind of my thoughts on that. I don't really see a big difference in my shooting when I go from like a flash hider to a compensator. And I equate that to just the amount of time I've spent like being very meticulous about my connection to the rifle. But overall, do what you do. I don't think it really matters.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some really stupid ones out there. They're like six chamber breaks and stuff, like very much skewed towards the competition crowd where they get like obnoxiously long and stuff. And I mean, if it helps, you know, I guess I'm in favor of that. But as I was kind of learning with some of the trial and error stuff I'm doing with handgun compensators, like at some point, if that starts to become a hindrance to how the weapon cycles. And you have to, I mean, if you're that invested in it and you understand like you're gassing down to a science, you understand that you like the kind of ammo you have to run, you understand all that stuff, like good on you. Me personally, I don't, I just don't. I like running regular, you know, 55 grain training ammo for most of my shooting. I want something that's going to cycle and run well with that, but will also run, you know, maybe like some 62 grain or something like that. That's where I'm looking for it to work. So I don't need to have all of that on there. I'd rather just, you know, learn how to shoot with what I have than try to do all the work through purchases and then figure out how to run that around those items.
Oh, 100%, dude. And that's the thing. Like, there's a happy medium to be had with all things, right? If somebody's running like an eight port break out at the end of their rifle, but they are competing at World Shoot or something like that, cool. Like, do your thing, man. Like, you have a specific goal in mind, and that's the overwhelming kind of principle of all this is like mission will dictate gear. What are you doing, or what are you likely to do? And a lot of people, I think, get caught up on too many what ifs and not enough of this is actually what I'm doing now. And then you have a lot of people that get caught up in the this is what I'm doing now, but what am I looking? What's the overall end goal of why is it important for me to learn this skill? So, and there's a happy medium in there of like you're learning to perform with your weapons platform, but the answer is why? Why are you learning how to perform with that? Is it self-defense? Is it surely sporting? Is it surely competition? Is it all of the above? And a lot of people, I think, get lost in the what am I doing now versus where do I want to go or what do I want the end goal to be?
Yeah, and I think that people lose themselves in that a little bit and try to build something that will cover every contingency. And that's just not like if you lean towards the things you're most likely to do, I think when you set up with any weapons platform, to be fair, but since we're talking about carbines, like it will probably suck at a couple of things. So, you know, if you want to build a gun that you can use for 50 yard and in shooting, right? And you can keep in your vehicle. Maybe that, I don't know, like it's a 11 and a half inch AR pistol. Will it shoot out to 100 yards or 200 yards? Yes. Does that mean that you should put a bipod on it? Probably not. You know, like you can't have all of the extra goodies attached to it, you know, and then expect it to do everything well. It just doesn't work that way. Magnified optics suck up close. That's how we have offset red dots. Having super collapsible stocks suck for distance shooting, but they're great for up close because they're compact platforms for, you know what I mean? Like, think about what you're most likely to do with it. This is why people get into the point of building multiple rifles for multiple jobs. It's not to say you can't do it, but like shooting an 8-inch AR with a red dot at 350 yards would probably suck. Like, I probably wouldn't enjoy that. Conversely, an 18-inch gun set up for it would be great. Doing CQB with an 18-inch gun would suck balls. Like, can you do it? Yes, you can. That doesn't necessarily mean that you should or would want to or enjoy it. So it's you're like I think the idea of the do everything well rifle is a unicorn. It's a myth. It just you'll do some stuff better and you'll do other things just by virtue of how you set the gun up for specific tasks. Me
Right.
personally.
And I think there's, and again, getting into the balance of all things, right? I think you're 100% right. Like certain guns, and I believe like certain kind of platforms that exist on the market have a very specific use case. My argument against that is I don't know. I have yet to meet a single prepared American that has a specialized role in the use case that a lot of them are setting guns up for. And I say that not to like talk down on the people that are setting up multiple rifles for multiple use cases. That's great, right? But if we're being realistic, one, the handgun in American society is primary. So all carbines by default are secondary because primary by definition is your first choice, first option, whatever. Nobody I know is actually concealed carrying their folding PDW in a backpack into fucking Walmart. So let's be
Yeah,
honest.
that's a very upsetting but really accurate observation. Well, not upsetting for me because I don't have a folding bag gun, but like, yeah, hella accurate. People conceal carry handguns. That's
Right.
the I mean, yeah, it's in terms of what your primary secondary is in Call of Duty, that's inaccurate, but in real world, that's 100% the way it usually goes. And guys that are like, you know, I don't want to take us too far off topic, but I did a video on what I carry in my vehicle. And dude, like, I work from home. I don't leave the house all that often. I don't go that far from the house that often. And I got guys shitting on me in the comments, like, you don't have any fucking water or a rifle. You're gonna fucking die. I'm like, dude, like, I carry a handgun. I concealed carry a handgun. I have extra ammo for a handgun. Like, that's what works. I actually kind of hate the concept of a truck gun because I think it's just like, oh, if something happens, you as a civilian are going to run 300 yards out through the, you know, IKEA parking lot to go get your gun and then run 300 yards back in. Like, no, your job's to take care of your family. Like, that's not, you know, I mean, and I'm not saying you shouldn't try and stop the threat when you have the opportunity, but I'm just saying, like, it's a little bit far-fetched for me. Just a little bit.
Right. And to me, like for most places that people are going to be, a handgun is a, to me, a handgun should be a 50 and yard in capable platform, right? Like you should be able to place pretty accurate, repeatable, predictable shots with a handgun at least out to 50. I know guys that can do it well beyond that. And to me, I look at it and I'm like, okay, well, what do I actually do with a firearm? And what's my end goal of what I want to be able to do? So to me, and kind of a rule I found out of two born out of two gun was every single carbine, and I say this down to an 11.5 all the way up to a, I would dare say a 20 inch, dedicated use precision gas gun, every single carbine should have a magnified and an unmagnified option. And that's something where people are like, well, what do you mean? I've seen you on the range without a magnifier. 100%. If I'm working something such as, a 50-yard bill drill, right? And I'm trying to get that in sub 3.5 seconds, and that's something that I am trying to push for, and I'm looking for just repeatable return of my dot, and I feel comfortable with that. 100%. I'm not running a magnifier because I'm working something specifically, but. If we're talking about the overall terms of preparedness, like I ran a magnifier in all of two gun where a lot of guys would just run a dot or an LPVO, gave me a huge edge. And that was something that I realized early on because I can go from shooting 10, 15, 20, 25 yard targets just 1x magnification with a red dot and it's ba bam, ba bam, ba bam, ba bam, ba bam. And then you get to a 75 yard Texas star that you have to take at 75 yards. Well, guess what? 3x at 75 yards on 8-inch plates gives you pretty good eye relief where I can see the rotation of the other plates coming in, but I'm also dialing up my magnification times three, where it's like I'm shooting a 25 yard head box and it's like ding, 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 ding. And I can have that at a moment's notice. So I kind of concluded my first year of two gun and I looked at it and I was like, damn. That would make sense for literally every rifle anywhere for just the sake of a high risk shot, right? It doesn't even have to be far. But if I'm asking you to shoot an A zone at 25 yards, that's an easy day. If I'm asking you to shoot the credit card A zone of a head box at 25 yards, you might take a second and say, man, I wish I just had a little bit clearer of a view of this.
Yeah, 100%.
To which I know guys are like, oh, you would use a magnifier at 25 yards on a head box? Maybe not 25, but 35, 45. Somewhere in there is your threshold of, man, if this was really high stakes for somebody's life right now, I want to have a little bit better of a picture of this.
Yeah, the
So,
context determines a lot. Yeah, if it was a hostage shot, right? Like you'd decide if somebody's life was on the line. Yes, I would love to have a magnifier for that shot. Like, why wouldn't I? Now, yes, out on the range, your homies are probably just gonna make fun of you. Like, dude, use a magnifier 25. Like, get good. Like, you know, context adds a lot to the discussion. I mean, let's be honest.
100%. But I walked out of that and I was like, man, it would make sense for, if it makes sense for a competition, it makes, to me in my head, it made even more sense to have in a defensive engagement, right? If nothing else, it's giving me a more definitive line of sight to where I want to put that energy. So that was something that I realized early on.
Now, let me ask you this with your magnifiers. How, when you go about setting yours up, because I've had this discussion with a couple of folks, like, obviously we zero our optics. So if you're running a magnifier, it's a dot or EOTech, you know, holographic, whatever. Do you zero your magnifier to your optic once you put it on, or do you just like put it on, take it off as needed and not worry about it? Because I think there is a degree of a general consensus. People think like, well, you don't zero magnifier. Like, then why does it have a windage and elevation adjustment if you don't? Now, do you have to? I know you to be reasonably accurate, no, you don't. But I think if we're talking about performance shooting and higher end accuracy, I think there's probably something to be said about it.
Oh, 100%. Like, I would never just randomly take a magnifier out of a box, put it on a mount, and then put it on my gun. The first place we're going is to the range because I have to verify, just for my peace of mind. I have to verify at 50 and 100, and I have to know that, okay, I have kind of documentation of what my accuracy standard was unmagnified at these distances. Now, putting this magnifier on, how is that impacting me, right? And I'll go out and I'll confirm. I've had pretty good success where I've made like a couple of them were no adjustment, a couple of them were minimal adjustment. And then 100% I'm a believer in quick detach magnifier mounts, but it heavily depends on that you are meticulous about where you mounted that optic, that well, optic, right, originally, and that it is a quality mount and that you have very, very strict specifications as to how tight that mount locks up to your upper receiver. Because I've seen it before where guys like will throw a magnifier on, they're like, oh, it's just unreliable. Well, then you go up and you can jiggle it around between the picket.
Yeah, that shit really fucking happens. I had it happen to me. It happened to me this weekend at the range, actually, which is really embarrassing. But I had my magnifier just work itself loose over the course of, I think, like, I don't know, probably the couple months since I had it set up. So my magnifier was loose. I go to pop it up, and the whole thing moves around on the rail, and I'm like, this is pretty shitty. And what was more embarrassing is how it, you never adjust those things, right? It took me like 20 minutes to remember how on the Unity mount, you just have to like you undo the QD and like push really hard on it, and it pops out, and then you can spin the adjustment nut. I'm like, yeah, all right, cool. No, I'm not gonna tell anybody. Well, I guess I'm telling everybody now that I had this much trouble adjusting it, but just one of those things where you're like, all right, this is annoying. Put this on the list of things that I need to check more periodically, because one of two things happened. Either I didn't check it well enough when I put it on, or it backed itself out. The Unity mounts make it so you it's I think the EOTech mounts do too. It's pretty hard for those things to back themselves off. So I fucked up when I set it up, and that's I have to be more vigilant in that. But the magnifier thing, like the mount, I think the quality has to be there. And there's some that are really good, and I don't know which ones you've used in terms of mounts, but I would say my experience so far with the Unity and the EOTech and the second gen Vortex ones are all pretty good. And there's more out there, I'm sure.
Yep, no, I used to use Unity mounts for all sorts of stuff, and those were always solid. I've kind of switched to ScalarWorks for my primary mounts, and that's literally the only reason. Like, Unity's great if people are into 226 optic heights. I used to be two, and as I keep shooting rifle, I keep
You think you're better than me because you don't shoot 226? Is that what you're saying?
No. Definitely, I think there's a use case for all sorts of stuff, but as a general
I just love
rule,
that people get so like bent out of shape over like what height another man runs his optics at. I love it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
well, so dude, there's a ton to look at when you're looking at rifle zeros and holds and optic heights. and chosen zero distances, all that stuff. And I've kind of settled on 193. I would love to find the comfort and predictability to shoot at like a lower one third, but I ran 226 for so long that I think I'll be at 193 for a while, just in terms of like the predictability and deliverance of the dot to my eye line is pretty similar going from a 226 to a 193. And I get very bent out of shape on like zeros and the math that goes into it, because to me, there's not a ton of variation that you really have to work with. But people will argue with me till they're blue in the face. They tell me that their GBRS group, Hydromount, has minimal holds at varying distances from whether it be 25, 50, 100, all the way out to 400. And that was kind of my question that I always had about these tall optic mounts. I'm like, the holds have to be pretty drastic, right? And I always said that, never confirming at 400. I was just always speculating, like it has to be. You're literally angling an optic down to meet as a beam to meet a certain point in the curvature of a ballistics. At some point, that has to have a downside effect. And everybody's like, no, man, it gets up to your eye line quicker, very minimal holds. And 100%, I learned shooting 8-inch plates, or trying to, in two gun.
Yeah, it does make like a huge difference in your holds out past like, I would say 25 or maybe 50 yards, I think, where you would see a drastic impact to that.
I was just gonna say, like, yeah, man, some of the hold under variances I had at that height optic with a 50 yard zero was pretty astronomical. I was holding at one point, I was a solid, probably realistically a foot underneath an 8-inch plate to finally hit it at like 200 or like 300. I can't remember what it was. And I was like, okay, this is dumb. Like, I'm not
That's a
gonna
lot.
keep.
That's a
Yeah,
lot,
like
dude.
it was a pretty drastic hold under, and I was like, that is stupid. And I went back and confirmed my zero, because I was like, my optic has to be off. Nope. Had a very like one round on top of the other grouping at 50 yards, and I'm like, okay, let's try dropping the optic height. So I did. I dropped it to 193, and I don't know what it is, but my holds were much less severe, much less severe. And I think it was actually taller than 226. For the style of Unity riser I had with an EXPS 3. So sorry, 226 guys, if you're already mad, but it may have been slightly taller than 226. Either way, I tell people all the time, like, as comfortably as you can, I would keep that optic relatively low to the bore axis. Because once you start raising the optic up, ever notice how everybody starts raising everything else up? And it's pretty crazy when you look at it. Like, they'll start with the optic, right? And then the next thing they do is they'll add a massive cheek weld onto the stock. So now you just raised up everything entirely. But then what they'll do is they'll raise the laser up off the rail. And I'm like, so you did the same. So you're doing the same thing. Then if you just lowered it all back down to the regular height, you would actually have like the same kind of lateral plane of alignment across all your things again. And that's where I kind of look at. I used to run everything super tall. I still have some tall mounts because, I mean, I think the aesthetics kind of look cooler than somebody running a lower optic. And I still use them for the sake of just like being up to date on them. A big focus of mine has been kind of setting up my rifle to what I expect students to show up with. And people will show up with tall optic mounts. People will be running absolute co-witness, which to me, I'm like, yeah, well, that's
That's a little low,
yeah, I'm like,
just
great.
my opinion. I who am I? I don't know, but like, I will say I find that the Hydra stuff intriguing. The whole it's like 2.93, I think. It's like really fucking tall. And then they partnered with Unity to make like the flip up mount, right? Like for the magnifiers on that. So obviously there is the intent to be able to use this out to distance, right? And I think the Hydra lends itself to 50 yards and in shooting, right? So CQB distances, I think, on short guns, right? That's why it's got like the bridge for the laser and shit and everything. And like, cool. I know a lot of guys that really like it. No, I don't. Most guys I talk to that like it are in law enforcement, and they do that kind of thing where it's most effective for them. And I'm like, cool, that's awesome. If you've tried it, you vetted it, whatever. Then I've had buddies that go out and buy the, I think it's the Lerna, the GBRS one without the laser bridge, and they're like, oh, it's so nice because it's just right there when you pick the gun up. And I'm like, okay, well, what did you zero at? And like, oh, I used a 37, yard zero. And I go, okay, well, so where does that put your holds at, like 100 or 200 or 25, or like how does that? And they're like, well, that's just what I was recommended to use. And I'm like, by who? And it's like some instructor or something. And like, if you understand it, and like if you as a shooter understand that, then fine, like party on, man. But I think to a lot of like what you're saying, and I run a 226 height, which is actually down from the 233 height I used to use. I don't feel great. Even the 233, I kind of struggle with some of my holds, just like when you put it on a completely like on just a silhouette, not a head box, like an IPSC target or USPSA or whatever, like whatever it is. Just a colored silhouette where it's like, well, there's the head. How much over that do I need to hold that dot to get it where I want it? And it gets kind of fucky. And that's at like 15 and 20 yards. Like you have to understand you're putting quite a bit of distance between the bore and the dot. And I found that I like the 226 a little bit more. I may start exploring the 193. I don't know. But that's just me. I think when you get into some of that Hydra stuff, you don't see a whole lot of guys running the magnifier with it. So maybe it's really not made for that.
Yeah, no, I mean, and here's my thing, right? Like, if you take the time to actually go out and confirm your holds, because there's so much that can affect how a gun patterns at any given distance, right? The optic height, the velocities, so your barrel length essentially, where you choose to zero at, all these things, the consistency of the ammunition that you're shooting, all these things can come into play. And then at the end of the day, most of these guys can theorize, well, I have a 50, is it 5,200 or 50, I think it's 5,200 yard zero. I don't know why I was thinking 5,250 for a second, but it's 5,200. And I'm like, cool. Here's the problem with that. Have you ever actually patterned your gun out to 200 yards and confirmed that that same zero that you had at 50 is zeroed at 200? Well, no. Okay. Well, so you know you have a 50-yard zero, and outside of that, you can't really tell me for sure if that's actually still zeroed at 200 or not, which to me I think is a problem. Like, we have to understand that just because in theory something is telling us, hey, if you zero at this, you're going to be zeroed at this. Well, is that based on a absolute co-witness height? Is that based on a lower one-third? Is it based on 193? Because at some point, changing variables is actually going to change the formula a little bit.
Yeah, it's done in a vacuum. And yes, in theory, it should all work out nicely. And that's never really like it's probably be close, but in terms of is close how you want a zero, I think is the question you need to start asking yourself, right?
Right. And that's where I tell people, to me, handgun zero distance should never be anything other than somewhere between 18 and 25. I zero all my handguns at 25, and
Same.
100%, I don't think people should be resting the guns on anything to do that. If you're not a 25 yard shooter, go learn how to be from somebody, and then zero your own handguns with good fundamentals at 25. I zero majority of my carbines at 50. That's where I feel comfortable zeroing everything, just understanding like kind of the trend of patterning I'm going to see at given distances. And then for bolt guns, stuff like that, I would zero at 100 all day long. But
So wait, you don't with a handgun, you don't like using a rest or a bag or anything to try and zero and then move off of that?
nope.
Yeah.
To me, I'm a very big fan of one, it re-ingrains fundamentals, right? Like a consistent, predictable, repeatable grip. Pulling the trigger with a purpose, understanding where that trigger is actually going to break, target focus, the whole nine yards. I know a lot of people that will zero handguns and they're doing it at like 10 yards and they're doing it like off of a tripod. And to me, you're defeating the whole purpose at that point. One, if it's a polymer frame pistol, if you're putting enough force, I don't think anybody actually takes the time to understand or measure the force that they're usually leaning into the pistol, and that's putting upward pressure on a polymer frame. I have to believe that's somehow affecting the how that barrel tilt is happening. So at some point, I think it's appropriate to have what I call like a practical zero, where you're going out and you're zeroing unsupported, trusting your fundamentals. You should be able to tell or call if you pulled a shot, make it up, and say, okay. And I've never in the last, I would say, 2.5, 3 years of zeroing handgun red dots at 25 yards, ever had an issue zeroing and being able to adjust to a good zero at 25 yards based off just freestanding and sending 5 round groups at a time.
Yeah, see, I would always advocate for some kind of a stand or a bag or something, just 'cause like my th and I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just my perspective is, especially with guys who are like newer shooters and they have such a high amount of variability in their performance. Like, I want to remove as much of that as possible when zeroing the optic, so they have something to, like, how can I say this? Like, I want them to know that the optic dot is the source of truth. Like, they can rely on that, and that's correct. And with, especially with new shooters, you see like so much flinching and trigger pull problems and grip problems and stuff. Like, I want to, and so maybe that's different. Maybe what you were speaking to is yourself personally versus like students and stuff, but I always try to use a bag or something because I personally just don't, this is gonna sound terrible. I don't trust myself to be consistent enough in the zeroing process. I'm like, I need this here or I'm gonna fuck this up.
So, in 100%, right? People do what they got to do. I have my preference of not using a bag or a rest or anything to zero handguns. The problem I see is this, right? And it's kind of this is why I think it's better to freestand and reinforce fundamentals and have like more of a practical accuracy zero than a rested zero. So, in my mind, if somebody's putting a pistol on a rest like this, right? And they pull the trigger, and they still don't really have a wherewithal of how to pull a trigger, and they just kind of go all the way from downtown and go, they can still move the gun off a rest. They can still have input into the gun that they wouldn't want to have. That's why I tell everybody that it's more paramount than you think to kind of go to any reputable instructor at like literally any of them and learn the foundations of a consistent, repeatable grip that gives you predictable results. Because at
100%.
the end of the day, if your grip, if you don't know, understand how to grip the pistol and you're trying to zero a handgun red dot, it's not going to matter if you do freestanding, if you do 5 yards, 10 yards, 15, 20, 25. You're going to have so much variability in there, rested or not, that, hey, maybe you actually pull the trigger straight back and not disturb the sights. But it's hard when you take somebody brand new and you give them all the sandbags in the world, they're nestled right down in. And they're pushing into the gun like this, and then they go.
Yeah, they induce more problems with the bag than they would basically freestanding.
Right. And that's where it's like, I think that you, if somebody's going to go out and zero their own red dot, and if they're a relatively newer shooter, hopefully somebody's with them to kind of
Yes.
verify and say, like, nope, that's not where this is grouping for me. And have them do it again. And if they have a different result from the first time that they zeroed their pistol, 100%. I've had people come to me and swear, like, this is zeroed at 25, and I'll shoot it at 25. And we are completely not even not low, not high, just completely to the left side of the target. And I'm like, I don't think so. And I've 100% talked to guys that are like, yeah, man, I thought I had this zeroed, but I'm starting to feel like it's not really that zeroed now because we also people will zero guns based to their bad habits, right?
True.
I've seen people have dots that are super high and right because they were hitting low left and thought it was a dot, and they just
They try to
sent it
fix
way
it
up.
by adjusting the zero.
Right, and they'll send it way up there, man. And then they'll be having a problem. I'll shoot their gun at like 10 yards on a 1-inch black paster, and it's like over the upper right-hand corner of an A zone. And I'm like, nope. And I will adjust the zero to just the windage, not even the elevation, and adjust it. And then I'll watch them shoot, and it'll be way low left. And I'm like, I see what you did. You
Yeah.
accounted for your own deficiency via your zero. So there's a lot of, and people will do it with rifle too.
I was going
Don't
to ask,
not
do you see that with the rifle? Yeah.
110% because a lot of people have a, because the thing about rifle is you would think you have more points of contact, so it should be a better a better platform for people to use predictably. But what happens is you have more chances for too much input into the gun. You have 4 points of contact to have too much input or to do the wrong thing, right? And that's where I start to see a lot of people have these misconceptions about the rifle, because the whole purpose of the rifle, the whole methodology behind the rifle over the handgun is increased speed with increased accuracy at increased distance, right? And it's kind of a triangle. And this is what I teach is if you take a triangle and you label two, all three sides of it, speed, accuracy, distance. And whenever you lose one, you should have the other two. So if I lose distance, what should I have? Increased accuracy and speed. If I can do a 25-yard bill drill in 3 seconds with a handgun, doing it in half that time shouldn't be an issue. And if it is, now it's a performance issue. Now, if I take away the speed portion of it and I have more distance, well, the whole process is that I should be more accurate, right? I should have better accuracy standards compared to the handgun. So you have this triangle. If you take away one side of it, you should still have at minimum the other two. Ideally, we want all three. So when I see people shooting rifles at handgun distances, say 25 yards, and they're going bang, 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 in my mind, that should be 1.5 to 1.6 splits all day. That should be bang, 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 bang. And you should be guaranteeing me A zone hits. 40 yards. I see guys go bang, bang, bang. Again, the whole idea is increased speed, increased accuracy, increased distance. So if we're stepping back in distance, ideally, I should still be faster. I should still be more accurate. At the very least, I should be one of the two. And that's where I think a lot of misconception around the rifle exists. A lot of people I see are using rifles inside of 25 yards, and it's like, that's great. That should be fast all day long. But if you're starting to see that your speeds with rifle are very consistent to your handgun speeds, there's a problem somewhere. Either you are very, very slow with the rifle, or you're very, very fast with a handgun, or you're very slow with both. I don't know. We're gonna, but 100%, we have ways to figure it out where we unlock some kind of broken mindsets for people where it's like, hey, you've been doing a 25-yard bill drill in 7 seconds. I think you can do it in four.
Yeah, well, and I think
And
that people will start to try and address that when they hear stuff like this, right? And they'll try to, same thing as anything else, like, oh, I'll address this through, I just need a better trigger. Let's say, like, I just need a lighter trigger. That's the only reason guys that shoot fast can shoot fast is because they have really light triggers. Or, I need to fuck with the gassing on my rifle, which I never recommend to anybody as a solution that you fuck with the gassing on it. Especially if it's like an off the shelf build from a reputable manufacturer, that stuff's like take that out of your hands. Unless you add a can to it, you do something to add a variable or something like that to the gassing system, like a can would, you really don't need to mess with the gassing. That shouldn't be, oh, just get an adjustable gas block. Like, I hate that as a solution. I fucking hate it. Almost as much as I hate as, people saying, well, you need a Geissele trigger. That's why you can't shoot fast. It's like, dude, there's guys out there that can run the shit out of a mil-spec trigger, and it has nothing to do with the trigger, man. It's all about training and proficiency. And to me, it's almost like the same thing with a lot of these. Like, we're talking about some of this stuff, like optics and red dots. And I don't know, I think you run Vortex stuff, but I know a lot of guys will consistently adhere to, I have to run an EOTech because there's no parallax. Like, it eliminates some kind of failure point in their performance. I'm like, yes, but if you know how to build a good platform and good connection points behind the rifle, I don't know that it should really make a lot of difference. Because if it did, you'd see everybody would only run EOTech. And we got tons of other shit. We got Vortex out there. We got Aimpoint. We got Trigicon. I run a lead and steel optic. Like, guys run scopes and shit. Like, the EXPS3 is a, I mean, I have one right here. Like, it's a good optic, but like, I'm not currently running mine. Like, there's pros and cons to everything. It's not going to
Oh,
solve it.
100%. And if guys are focusing on their optic or the parallax to that extent, I mean, it's the same principle as a handgun. You should be target focused at any given distance, right? The only time I would say that that changes a little bit is maybe under magnification, but even then, you shouldn't be focusing on your reticle. You should be focusing on where you're sending that energy. I occlude my rifle dot all the time. and will run it occluded and place very accurate hits at 60, 50, 40 yards. And it actually helps me process everything a little bit faster because you're not having the distraction of the dot, right? That's very easy for just not only pistols, but rifles too, to pick up this rifle. And I'm looking for the dot. There it is. Cool. And all of a sudden, like I'm just tracking that dot up and down, everywhere it goes. Versus, I can take one of these little rubber cover things and I can close off the front. And now, if I'm not target focused, I just see a dot on a black background versus a dot hovering over my point of focus, which is my target downrange. And I think guys get really into the weeds with that stuff, and it's like I'll run a freaking EOTech, I'll run an MRO, I'll run an Aimpoint, I'll run Vortex. Really prefer Vortex, but I'll run a HoloSun. It's all the same process of my dot should not be something that I'm focused on. It is merely a peripheral reference point for me to know that I'm relatively accurate. So at that point, I think people are getting into the weeds for no reason. Right. I've heard people say how much they hate the MRO because there's a blue tint. And my question's always like, well, why are you so focused on the blue tint? Why are you focused on that dot? Why are you looking at that? And I'm like, 100%. Like, if we can talk about preferences, everybody has preferences. But if that's something that just completely ruins an optic option for you, I think you're worried about the wrong shit. That's just my two cents.
And you see, guys will say stuff like that. I'm worried about the blue tint, or I run the LP1 from Lead and Steel right now, and oh, it's got this the red film, that's on the front lens, which, by the way, guys, like every red dot has that. It's literally how the technology is designed to work to, like, I think it's reflect or refract that dot back to your eye. But people will freak out about it. I've had guys tell me like they stopped running it because they were out in the woods and someone, one of their buddies took a photo and it's like, look at all that reflection. I'm like, okay. So again, they, advocate I have to run the EXPS3 or EXPS2 or whatever from EOTech because look how clear the glass is. I'm like, yeah, but I also see more EOTechs break in the glass than a lot of other rifle red dots. And I'm not trying to throw shade at EOTech. They make a great optic. Just a realistic observation on it is for the things it does really well, which is the lack of parallax. It's great under night vision. If you have the EXPS3 anyway, great under night vision. And you like the reticle for the data that it can give you. This one's the one that's got like the center dot and then one dot below it and the outer ring. Cool. But yeah, it's durability wise, is it the strongest optic on the market? No. Battery life wise, is it the most reliable? Not really, not compared to other stuff, but that's, you have to understand the preferences, like you said, right? But then also, like, truly pros, cons to it. And if you can adapt to those things, you'll be better for it because you'll understand. But I don't think that, again, if it really was the end all be all option, you would see everybody out there running it. And you see T2s out there and stuff that are, and T1s that are a decade plus old. And it's like, why haven't you moved off of that? It's like, because I don't need to, because it does what I need. So understand what you're using, and that just because somebody tells you something doesn't mean it's actually the best solution for you.
Oh, 100%, man. I've had a lot of people tell me a lot of things about different platforms and tell me what I should and shouldn't be doing, what I should and shouldn't run. And well, I mean, some of those people I've smoked in competition, some of those people I don't really hear a whole lot about anymore. And to me, firearms are really nothing new, right? There's some new things that we put on them. There's some new ways of kind of, implementing them or why we have them. It's a different world, obviously, than a long time ago, but the core principles and the overarching themes of running these firearms has not changed in a very, 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 very long time. So I don't know. I think people get 100% worked up about the wrong things. People get worked up over brand names, which is fucking weird to me. Like, unless you're sponsored and unless you're getting a paycheck to endorse a company, I don't know why people ride so hard for certain things. It's super weird. Like people will go to bat for a company hoping that the company notices them. And then even when the company does notice them, there's no like
Nothing.
there's you gain nothing from it
Well,
except them saying, cool.
and I mean, and what's funny too is like you'll see the guys that do have relationships with those companies. Like I have at least some degree of a relationship with Lead and Steel. I know the owner. I've talked to him a couple of times. Like, they have sent me some stuff. I don't know if you work with Vortex or have a relationship with them or whatever. I know there's guys out there that do and have relationships with Vortex and EOTech and Trigicon. Like, that's the industry, right? But most of those guys will even say, like, oh, I work with EOTech. I would recommend that. Oh, well, I bought an MRO. I was thinking about getting rid of it. And those guys will be like, no, dude, don't do that. Go shoot and go train. Like, real dudes will tell you that. Look, dude, just because I have that relationship doesn't mean that you have to as well. Like, there are very different reasons for why I work with them than what you're thinking and doing. So don't sell that optic at a loss. Keep what you have, and if you have extra money, go buy more ammo or go take a class or whatever, right? Go take your wife out to dinner. There's a fucking crazy concept. Do something nice for your family instead of for yourself and just go train with it. Yeah, the brand alignment stuff, sometimes questionable. Unless they do something like really shitty politically or fuck over a whole bunch of people, like not recalling dangerous firearms or something. Then I don't know that you really need to be that overly concerned with another man's brand of fucking red dot. I mean, come on, it's 2025, guys.
No, it's super weird. Especially when I posted my video. I can't remember if I was running the Aimpoint Duty RDS at the time or if I had switched everything over to Vortex by the time I did that video. But somebody said something like, "You run a break on your go-to rifle, yikes." And I'm thinking, yeah, like who? I'm like, that's super weird. And then somebody also made the comment of like, "Well, why would you run the Aimpoint Duty RDS when you could run this or that option?" And I'm thinking, I don't even know if I replied to him because a lot of times I look at comments that are dumb and I'm just like, no.
Yeah,
And that,
not worth
but
the energy.
yeah. And I'm thinking, well, no, the Duty RDS hasn't ever done me dirty. It still hasn't, actually. Like that thing ran like a top, had zero issue with it. And I can't say enough good things about this. Like, I think it's a Spark Solar from Vortex. Like
Yeah.
it's a budgety red dot. I think it costs maybe like $250, maybe less. And dude, I've beat the hell out of this thing since I've had it. It's gone through probably 2,500-ish rounds. And I don't treat my go-to guns nicely because if something's gonna break, like I'm gonna make it break.
Yeah.
So, and this thing has been a champ, hasn't lost zero. I mean, I equate that to probably the Scalaworks mount. That thing is, I've been very happy with that. But just a tank of an optic, man. It runs, it boasts a super good battery life. If it lasts for an eighth of what it boasts, I'll be happy because I'll just still change my battery out once a year, like everybody should for every optic ever. And it does the thing. It holds zero. I have no complaints. And people ask me all the time, like, well, what do you think about such and such red dot? I'm like, does it hold zero? Cool, run it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Whatever works for you, man.
Yeah, just
So.
don't go out and get the cheapest thing you can fucking find. Like, I am a fan of the Vortex Crossfire 2 red dot. It's like
Yep.
100, 150 bucks. It's not the greatest. The refresh rate's a little bit weird. They're not a T1, right? Like, some guys want to sell them off because they look decent and they look like a T1 or a T2. They're not that, but they're not awful for the money. Nowadays, when I recommend stuff to people, I'm like, just spend more than $200, because I think once you cross that 200 or 250 threshold, like you were saying with the Spark, you just get into a little bit higher quality of components and quality control that you're just gonna have less of those kinds of issues with it. Now, if all you can afford is a $100 red dot from like Primary Arms or Hollow Sun, then like, dude, go do the things and save up money to replace it later. Unless you don't have issues. Like, if you don't have issues with it and it holds zero and you don't have refresh issues or flicker or anything like that, then just don't do it. Like, it always surprises me when people are like, oh yeah, I just want to try something different. So I went from the RMR that I've had with zero issues over 7 years to go try this new Hollow Sun, large window optic or whatever. And like, fine, I don't care about Hollow Sun and their optics. Like, I own a couple. They're actually remarkably good, considering that they're completely Chinese made, but you're just spending the money for the sake of it. Cool. However, if there are other things you need to do, like, don't prioritize that over them. So It's, I don't know, at the end of the day, it's just a really silly argument for so many things. Why do you run that optic? I have people leave comments like, oh, they say like really gnarly shit about lead and steel. And I'm like, but the optic is really, really good. And I've never heard any of the stuff that you're saying other than from you. So I'm not in a position to make that change necessarily. I don't know what to tell you, man. Sorry. If it upsets you, I guess turn off the video. I don't know
Yeah, dude.
how
I
to
mean,
say.
people get like worked up over wild shit, man. And I have kind of a new methodology. Like, if you want me to listen to your opinion, you need to give me a reason why I should, right? And that's not trying to be cocky, it's not trying to be arrogant, but it's like if you're gonna come in somebody I don't know that has all these opinions about all these things, what are you basing it off of? Like, were you a tier one operator? Were you an operator of any kind ever? Are you a competition shooter? Are you good at competition? And it's like when we start looking at some of the things that and all the commonalities, because if you look and pay attention, there are some very strong commonalities between the best rifle shooters in the world on a competition scale and tier one operators. And if you start looking at the similarities and you look at kind of their methodologies of how each of them set up rifles in two completely different worlds, both the best of the best and their given disciplines. And you look at the similarities and how they set up their rifles and why and what they actually care about versus not. You need to give me something on par with that level of knowledge for me to take you seriously. Otherwise, you're just somebody bitching on the keyboard. And it's like, I've never seen a serious competitor or a serious operator ever in my life go to the keyboard and worry so much about what someone else is running. Their attitude is usually pretty similar to, yeah, if it works for you, man, like run it. Good for you. And that's kind of where I realized, like, man, that is probably the most professional take to have. Like, I don't care what somebody runs. I like to run Vortex stuff. To answer your question, like, I do have a mild relationship with Vortex. I don't feel comfortable saying that I'm a sponsored shooter or anything like that, or even an affiliate, but they've taken good care of me. I love the dudes over there. I'll just say I have a really good relationship with them. So I've been running Vortex stuff predominantly, very happy with it. If somebody wants to run HoloSun and they believe in HoloSun, go ahead. Don't care. Trigicon, don't care. If it works for you and you're getting the results and you have a repeatable process you've built to get those results, who am I to tell you to do anything different?
Well, and as long as you're spending the time with your whatever platform, it's all rifles, right? So as long as you spend the time at the range with your rifle to know that, like, you've gotten the good results. You've gotten to be able to repeat them more than once, more than twice, like more than five times, like where you can actually say matter of factly that that is going to work for you the way you need it to when you need it. That's what's fucking important. It's Now, yes, there's usually some sort of relation between super cheap mounts and optics and super inconsistent performance. And I don't need to say brand names or anything. You guys just know if you were to start throwing out some of these brands, if you go, huh, I've never heard of that, then it's probably a pretty good indication that maybe not where you want to put your money. Just either keep saving or go a different direction, no matter. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like there's plenty of, and I say this as a YouTuber, you, Garrett, you also have a YouTube channel. Like, I'm sure you'd say you're going to say the same thing, but like, there are YouTubers out there who will take free optics and free shit from anyone and create a video telling you how it's the next greatest thing. It's the EOTech killer. It's the SRO killer. It's the Aimpoint Acro killer. And it's like, no, it's not, dude. No, it's not. When they have the track record of any of those optics, maybe not the Acro, the P1 was a little bit problematic. But like, as soon as you have the track record that beats the RMR, which is probably borderline impossible at this point, then you can start saying it's an RMR killer. But dude, like, you can just tell when your channel and people's channel is entirely optics and things you never heard of, probably not a good source of information for you, man. Go find somebody else. And that's how you should do what everyone else does. But if you're just vetting out and doing your gathering from different resources and different people, which you should do, something to think about, right? Because you can tell who's bought and paid for.
100%, man. And I mean, like, there's two sides to that coin. Like, I'm stoked for the dudes that can make a living off of social media and do the whole YouTube thing, and that's great, that's neat. However, you have to keep in the back of your head that if guys are doing YouTube full time, They are making money from doing things that are commonly demonetized on the YouTubes, and that money source is coming from usually the brands that are paying them to do a review. Now, not all the time, but if it's their full-time job, they're going to do what they got to do to put food on the table. It is what it is. So you
Yep.
have to take those reviews with, I would say, 80% this is entertainment, 20% I'm learning something about a product that I might be interested in. And I will tell everybody, don't ever buy the first gen or the first iteration of any product. Let them put it out. Let people find why it sucks. One, will the company respond and will they make a better version? That's kind of a big tell about how the company does business. And two, that second gen should have all those original fixes programmed in or fixed or molded or whatever product it is. Now, it's probably something that you can have a safe bet about, like, hey, is this for me? Is it not? Maybe I'll spend the money to try it. But there's 100% dudes out there that'll tell you that a fucking monster mount off of Amazon is worth your time. And I'll tell you firsthand, I tried using monster risers for like stupid, like cheap options to when I was still stoked on 226, just trying to get my optics up. And those fucking things, I could use half a bottle of Loctite. They were coming loose somehow, somewhere, some way.
You know,
Monstrum
it's funny you say that
sucks.
because I actually had somebody recommend Monstrum scope mounts to me like last week, and I was like, no, I'm sorry, it was a Monstrum scope, and I'm just really skeptical, especially about glass. Like, if you guys are building a rifle, you want an LPVO, you make your money, metaphorically speaking, right, on your glass. Cheap glass is really shitty. It's really bad. And when I say cheap, I mean like sub $500, which is not cheap to a lot of you guys. Just understand when you say I want to build a rifle with an LPVO, your optic setup and your mount are probably going to cost you north of $800 if you do something even remotely reliable. I'm thinking like the Vortex, the Viper 1-6, and like a American Defense mount or something comparable, like a good, robust, rugged mount. So maybe $600 to $800 minimum.
I was gonna say, I mean, and that kind of tracks to the $600 range because I will say, for the money, Primary Arms does a pretty good LPVO. Like, I can't lie, I have one. I've ran it. It was nothing but a pleasurable experience, and I was like, okay, like this is pretty dope. But I also put that into one of the Unity mounts, and that right there, like the mounts themselves are usually gonna be a pretty hefty investment, and you'll some and just like this one, I think it's like a $350 scope with a $300 mount. Like, it's sometimes the mount's going to cost almost as much as the optic, depending on how low you go. I don't think I'd go much lower than that. But 100% Monstrum, I think, is one of the biggest scams out there. If people want like budget scope rings, the only budget brand that I've heard, like, we'll say 75% positive, 25% negative on, are the Leapers, UTG Leapers scope mounts that are like 50, 60 bucks or something like that. And people have said that for the price tag, like, you have to check it, you have to be up on your maintenance shit, but if you're okay with doing that and you have the time to do it, people have said those are absolutely solid. Now, I have not tried that, but I would be very curious to see like somebody run one for like a 1,000 round range day, and I want to see what happens to it. I don't want to invest the funds to do something like that, so I encourage someone else to do it because I don't want to.
I don't want to. I have heard better things about UTG. I know they're like kind of an airsofty company. I've used their fixed rear iron sights on a couple builds, either for my dad and my brother and one for myself. Like, they're okay. Their stuff is getting better. It's still not at a point where I have used enough of it where I'm like, hey, they've rounded that corner. You know, like Hollow Sun years and years ago was kind of a regarded as a garbage company, and then all of a sudden they rounded that corner. And like, hey, their pistol dots, no joke. Hey, their rifle stuff, getting better. Companies can do it. It's not easy, but it can be done. I don't, my personal experience with them is not there yet, but I'm starting to hear more positive things about that company. I will say that much.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the only like kind of Amazon available budgety company that I've heard some relatively good things about. People have sent me like links to different Monstrum. Monstrum's the one that keeps coming to mind. I just that utter fucking trash. But I mean, yeah, optics and stuff like that, man. I mean, the sky's the limit as far as what people want to run or how they want to do it. I just tell everybody, no matter what you run, no matter what height it is, on whatever length barrel, go out, find the space, find the time. Pay a farmer $200 for you to go out and just use his wide open field for a day. Go out and actually pattern your gun at varying distances, because I guarantee that unless you are at the perfect specs of what they specified when somebody said, hey, that 50, 200 yard zero, that should match, I guarantee that your gun's going to be slightly varied from that in one direction or another. And my fear is that people will just trust that information, and then, someday somebody will come up with an LPVO on a 200-yard threat, whether it be mass active shooter, end of the world, whatever it is. Insert your, probably won't happen to you scenario here, and they come up and they take a shot, and it's just enough off where somebody innocent had to get hurt because you didn't go out and do your homework. And it's like with pistol dots too. I tell everybody, like, once you understand your fundamentals, go from 5 yards to 50 yards. And once you feel like you understand that, go to 55, go to 60, go to 65, because all you're doing is reinforcing good fundamentals and you're learning about what the capability of your platform is. That's all you're doing. You're just learning at the end of the day. Now, I'm not saying like you should take a 65-yard pistol shot on somebody. No, but you're learning about the platform. So,
100%. definitely stuff you should invest the time in to understand, like truly, not just like know how to use it, like understand like deeply what your capability is, but also what that tool's capability in terms of what it can physically do, what it is. So but
absolutely.
we're kind of pushing at time here, man. So I've appreciated this. This is like honestly, I don't know if I've ever actually had a this like focused a conversation with a guest, like talking just about a rifle. I mean, we got into some handgun stuff, but like we're almost at like an hour and a half and it's just been like nonstop. So it's been fantastic, dude. I really appreciate you making the time and sitting down with me to walk through all this.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I love talking about this stuff. I call myself a super nerd. So it was great being back on, man. I love talking about this type of thing. And hopefully somebody takes something from it, at least just gives them something to think about as far as the rifle platform goes. And 2026, RAS Group is I'm sorry, started this year. 2027, we plan to actually post some rifle courses. Hopefully get people out with their platforms, stretching the distance a little bit, getting uncomfortable shooting at some pretty aggressive rates of fire at some distances they're probably not used to. So,
So what's the I know I obviously you're on Instagram and you have a website. Where can people reach you if they either have questions on the classes or on anything we got into here today? Where can they get a hold of you?
our Instagram is underscore RAS group. And then the website is rasgrouptraining.com, either one of those. And then my email for the business is garrett@rasgrouptraining.com. So email, Instagram, just leaving a comment on a YouTube video. I'll never ignore comments that ask about something related to like training or like
Something
progression.
relevant. Yeah.
Right. I will ignore the comments that are like, oh, you shilled for Vortex, which is funny because I loved one of their recent dots and then did not really care for the other one and said as much. So there's a lot of shit that I'll ignore, but if somebody ever comments anything and they're like, hey, I'm having trouble connecting to the rifle, I feel like this XYZ scenario is happening, usually we can diagnose it pretty quick and at least give them something to think about without having them in front of us. So,
Yeah, that's
but
awesome, man.
yeah,
So good
absolutely,
stuff,
dude.
man. And we'll do this again in the future. Obviously, you and I will be in touch. We talk all the time, but thank you, man. Appreciate it. And stay safe.
Yeah, you too, brother. Thank you.
Man, there's still so much that we for having like the great conversation that we did. There's still so much stuff that we didn't get into. I mean, really some of the things I had like top of mind when when envisioning what this conversation might get into, like we didn't talk at all about iron sights or offset irons or, you know, secondary aiming. We did like very briefly touch on the use of a visible aiming laser, and in the context of like gas masks, I think was the example that Garrett had used. And I guess that makes sense. I haven't really shot with a gas mask before, so maybe that's viable. I know that it's pretty well documented the issues that those present. A lot of people are like, oh yeah, that's why we run like tall optic mounts, and that's certainly something to be, you know, considered. We didn't get into irons and didn't really touch on lasers and stuff. We didn't talk about like really a ton of the internals either, you know, with bolt carriers and stuff, springs and weights and the things you can really get into, like tuning your rifle. I think it's probably one of those things. He talked quite a bit about his relationship with modern material and the quality of that rifle. I think that's probably when you start getting into those better, those more, I'll say more like higher end type rifles, not ones that you're buying for sub $700 off the rack or building for sub $500 from parts on the internet. When you're getting over that, you know, just leave them as they are. They're designed that way and mass produced that way because of their, and I use the term mass produced lightly. Companies like ModMat and stuff, they don't like truly mass produce. Just on scale, when you compare that to like how many M&P Sport 2s are out there, like it's not even comparable. But you guys get hopefully the point. They have designed the platform. They recreate it because they've had success with it in their own testing. But we haven't really gotten into stocks or grips or any of that stuff, which is really all I think just personal preference. Same thing with to a degree anyways, like charging handles and things like that. We didn't talk a lot about scopes. We talked about glass in general, but we didn't really get into the finer points behind it. So there's still plenty to get into there. Like the carbine conversation, for being one that, you know, like I said in the intro, a lot of people consider to be very commonsensical and something, oh, we've heard this discussion 1,000 times. We've been through all of this stuff before. And then you sit down with people who have really developed, I will say, a strong understanding of the platform, how to be effective and capable with the platform, and have experienced the highs and the lows, right? They've had major successes, they've had major failures, not in terms of like scored competitive shooting, but in terms of the actual products themselves. You know, he mentioned some of the cheap mounts and stuff online that he had spent some time and money with, and all the issues he had with them, which just reaffirms what a lot of us have heard and believe is true, right? With, you know, buy a more quality mount, it will make up the difference, the mount will, with a cheaper optic to a degree, right? But you won't take a $5,000 scope, put it in a $50 mount, and have good success. So you can make it up on one end, but not the other, so to speak. And we got into some of that, certainly. We talked about the controls and vertical foregrips and optic height, right? Which is widely bitched about on the internet by so many fucking people. It's just ridiculous. So really, really, you know, good stuff there. Talked a little bit about white light and the controls and activation behind that. I know that's something that a lot of people, myself included, spend a lot of time and money trying to get that to work out correctly for them. We also didn't really get into slings. I don't know. I think there's probably a lot of information on all of this stuff. So maybe we didn't really miss out on too much. We just didn't get to it. But I do hope that this has been, you know, helpful for you guys. I think stuff like this, like I think back to like my early days of listening to podcasts and some of the stuff like on the Fieldcraft Survival podcast in like 2016 and 2017, when they were talking about some of these more fundamental concepts. They were some of the things I've listened to probably 10, 20 times, right? And I'll still more than likely go back and listen to them again, because for as much as we've beat this horse, right, and as much as, you know, rifle shooting hasn't really changed in the last 60, 70 years, it's always good to go back and revisit this stuff because, you know, the fundamental foundational things are true and the concepts behind them are, they hold true. So, yeah, man, it's a good discussion to have, especially with more and more people getting into their first AR platform rifle, or maybe it's not even an AR. It doesn't have to be an AR. It could be something like an FAL. Maybe you're just buying a SCAR because FN, I'm sorry, has decided that they're going to, you know, kill off an iconic rifle, and a bunch of us Battlefield fans and Call of Duty fans are upset about it. I don't freaking know. But any rifle platform, a lot of the stuff we talked about is pretty much, you know, something that carries over from one platform to the next. Maybe not for everything, you know, like if you got an AUG or something, maybe some of this will be a little bit different and you'll have a slightly different experience. I think we were talking a lot just about ARs, but anything that follows a similar pattern to the AR I think you'll find a lot of this stuff to be applicable. So, as always, I do really appreciate you guys listening. If you found this helpful, please tell a friend, hit subscribe. The numbers really do help. You know, the YouTube channel's blowing up right now, relatively. Like, you know, the last, I'll say, month or two has just been very, very gracious for me. And it's very exciting to see you guys be excited about the content and people to look towards the future for more of what we have to offer here with Prepared Mindset. That's a really, really big deal. And looking forward to bringing new stuff to you guys. And we're kind of rolling into, not kind of, we are. Like, we're a couple days out from Halloween. The year is basically almost over, right? Because once you get into Halloween, it's the dreaded Christmas music season. And then past that, we really get into the holidays where it's like less training time, more family time, which is awesome. And I love it. And I think you guys should love it too. But also try and find the opportunities to get out with the homies and go shoot when you can. We had a really successful range day last year in November. And I would say a successful range day in December, albeit it was fucking cold as shit. It was like 30 degrees. And then we got into January, went out and did a night vision shoot. It was 19 degrees outside. My energy drink turned into a fucking slushy. But all that to say, the point I'm trying to get towards here is please hit subscribe. I appreciate your guys' patronage and support, listening, checking this out. If you have thoughts, if you had feedback, please feel free to, always feel free to email. Had somebody email about a helmet question, because I had some content up about the Protection Group Denmark stuff. Have people reach out about night vision and, hey, should I sell this older housing I have for anything that's new on the market? What's your recommendation? I get people asking about where I shoot and where we train CQB and stuff. So if you guys have any questions, always know the door is open, and I'm always happy to, you know, help folks out where I can, when I can. So that's all I have for this week, actually. More to come next week, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe out there. Happy Halloween, everybody. And until next time, like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.